Coming up on the show, we forget our mic. James takes a sponge bath. And Mike kills a moose with his bare hands.
Hey, this is JamesRobbins.com!
And this is me. And you scared the shit out of me. This is Couch Potato Mike.
Couch Potato Mike, how the F are you?
I was...
taking a poop, I understand, yes.
Right here in the chair.
Yes, he is pooping in the chair.
This episode has been a debacle from the word go.
Yes.
For those of you out there listening to this for the first time, this is not the first time we've started this particular episode. We forgot our microphone again. It's, you know, I can see how it's easy. It's like big and white and round and just
yes,
is the most obvious thing in the fucking room.
Looks like Alan Rickman.
We just keep forgetting it. It looks like Alan Rickman had a baby with Warwick Davis.
Yes.
And it got all depressed and shit.
I am just a microphone. Yes, yeah, so...
I had a really great show opening, too. I introduced myself in a way that I really seemed to like this time. Now I can't remember what it was.
Yeah,
it's
something about you're large and in charge and inside.
No, I'm like, oh yeah, and by his side, along for the ride, sitting here with pride, glad I'm inside, I'm Couch Potato Mike.
Yes, you are sincerely Couch Potato Mike,
yep,
a.k.a. Without Wax.
Without wax.
Without wax.
Why would I need wax?
Sincerely, without wax.
I'm confused.
That's the phrase origin of sincerely.
Without wax?
Yes, it was like Latin or Italian.
Sincerely means without wax.
Yes, well, sin in most, you know, romantic languages means without.
I don't like the name romantic languages either. I mean, it sounds a lot more hearts and flowers than it should be.
Yes.
It just means of Roman descent.
Yes, of Roman.
Romany.
Yes, and on that train wreck, let's get the show started.
Okie dokie. Coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about what documents you need to put in your bob. Not your battery-operated boyfriend, by the way. Why we use raised bed gardens, lessons learned from a tiny house winter, and improve upon these six areas to reach your health goals. And we have a special announcement, but that's coming up later. But first, we're going to jump right into our sponsors and tell you about the good folks over starting at jmbullion.com.
Yes, if you are looking to have a monetary hedge for your money, a safe harbor for your money instead of, you know, the Federal Reserve eroding your money every single year, then I suggest you invest in silver and gold, specifically silver because it's affordable if you're broke like most of us are. I suggest you get it from JM Bullion. They have the best prices on the internet. They have free shipping for all orders over $100, which is the minimum, so you have to make your orders over $100. They've got some really neat designs. Sunken treasure, for God's sake.
Sunken treasure, you say?
Yes, they've got 10-ounce coins, which are really neat. So they're like off-brand dimes.
Are they like doubloons?
No, they're like, I'm talking about the 10-ounce ones. Oh. They're like, you know, because a 10th ounce is basically a dime, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
I never put that together before.
Yes.
So I have a 10th ounce of silver on the board.
Pretty much.
Sweet.
I think I've got some in my wallet in the hidden compartment that I keep my silver at. But jmbullion.com, check the banner right-hand margin, and show them some love.
Yep. We lost our energy somewhere. We got to get it back. Or at least I did. It was all depressing.
Yeah. You should snort some heroin.
Yes, and you know where you can get your heroin? CampingSurvival.com.
Absolutely not, but you can get fish antibiotics, life straw filters. You can get everything for your bug out and bug in needs at CampingSurvival.com. Great people. I've spoke to the owner. He's an awesome guy. And I really like them, and I suggest that you get them because you should be stocking up on fish antibiotics for the rare emergencies during the apocalypse that you happen to need fish antibiotics!
Yep, in case you've got a sick fishy.
Or, you know, you have to amputate your buddy's arm.
Yeah, and your buddy's a fish.
Yes, or a human. And campingsurvival.com, check the banner right-hand margin, and stop by!
Yes, stop by. Stop by campingsurvival.com. I've been there once or twice myself.
Yes.
I actually haven't bought anything yet.
I had a dream about them there at night.
You had a dream?
About campingsurvival.com. I dreamt they had a retail store, and I went to it.
Huh.
And whatever.
That'd be interesting. I think all websites should come out with, like, a retail store.
Yes. Well, that's, you know, profit-wise. But,
Seriously, I mean, wouldn't you like to go to the Amazon mall?
That would be insane.
That would be insane. And you know where else?
I would want to avoid it, because it would probably be... I mean, you. When's the last time you went to a mall?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, pretty much hate everyone in there.
Yeah, I've actually been to a mall recently, but just over to the food court.
Oh.
Yeah, I was there for pizza.
Oh, you should have went for coffee.
Yeah, and you know who has great pizza? Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
No, they do have the best coffee you can ever get, though. Sometimes I like to bring my coffee over here to, you know, help stay awake, and, you know, I have so much coffee. It sounds like I'm on coffee right now. I'm actually not. Well, I did. Well, I had, what, two or three cups this morning already? Yep. So.
Yeah, we're recording in the morning. We usually record the show in the evenings.
Which is maybe why we sound a bit more energetic. Instead of being up for like 24 hours,
You sound a bit more energetic. I sound grumpier.
Yes. You should have ate a whole package of Peeps on cheat day like I did.
Ham. Yeah, we just tried to eat some of those Peeps. We're forgetting about Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
Yes. The point was, normally I bring over my coffee here because I am spoiled on Mai Tai coffee. They have the best quality organic fair trade coffee where their proceeds go to help orphanages. Their employees that pick from the coffee trees in Thailand are paid a fair wage so they can support their families. But instead, I drink your wife's coffee, which is Folgers. It does the trick. It has caffeine. It does. But we both know it's not Mai Tai coffee.
Yeah, no, it's not Mai Tai coffee.
It doesn't put fizzies in your man parts.
It also doesn't help out a local orphanage in Thailand.
No, it doesn't. I'm sure Folgers actually is actively using their proceeds to beat orphans. And yeah. Mai Tai does not. So go click on the banner in the right-hand margin and buy your coffee from Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffees. Check out the Mexicali. It's my favorite.
Yeah, and you know where else is a good place to go beat orphans? Wellfoodco.com.
No. John Wellborn and Kate Wellborn absolutely do not beat orphans. But they do possibly feed orphans with their great high-quality paleo-ish snack foods. They have paleo cookies, and they are delicious. My favorite was the paleo... Well, actually, my favorite was the carne bar. The carne bar developed with Rob Wolf is amazing. It's sort of a properly done pemmican bar.
Meat bar.
And it has live cultures for active, you know, gut bacteria health, which I'm a big proponent of.
I went hunting with my uncle one time and he shot a live pemmican.
No. Well Food Co. Awesome food. If you're gonna eat, you know, well, I mean, they have things like organic grass fed, beef protein, which, it's an awesome thing. If you're working out, you should definitely supplement with protein. But if you're going to have snacks, you might as well cheat with paleo foods. And it's not really that much. Not everyday foods, but definitely, you know, as a cheat or an occasional treat, check out Well Food Co. and get some food from there.
Yeah. Do they have haggis?
They don't.
Then I guess we're going to have to go over to greeningout.co.uk.
UK, yes. If you like freedom, and you don't like Braveheart, check out my buddy Dan Green and Katie Green at the Greening Out Podcast, where they talk about anarchy, freedom,
and Alice in Wonderland,
conspiracies,
that are sitting on a bin with 3 cubic acres of cash in it,
and 80s cartoons all the time.
DuckTales.
I was talking to Dan, actually. I was like, I realized after that conversation with you about 80s cartoons the other morning, and that Katie is a big 80s cartoons fan. She has a tattoo of Jim and the Gemstones or whatever. You know what they're talking about? The 80s cartoon?
Jim. She's truly outrageous.
She has a Jim tattoo.
Truly outrageous.
I was like, if we ever got on the topic of 80s cartoons, it would be a 17-hour-long podcast with us.
I can't remember the name of Jim's band now. I used to watch Jim. I had the hots for Jim when I was a bit.
Jim and the Gemstones or something?
No, it wasn't Jim and the Gemstones. It wasn't that.
Jim and the Crack Rocks?
Anybody know the name of Jim's band? G-E-M, her name was.
Yes.
Anybody know the name of that? Drop us a line at james@survivalpunk.com so I can quit feeling like a fucking idiot.
Yes. And with that, let's jump into our first news story of the day!
Okay, what documents you need to shove up in your bug-out bag?
Yes.
This news story comes...
Hold on, this news story originally came from myfamilysurvivalplan.com.
And then it vanished.
And the document is no longer on there. But while searching for the name of the article, I came across greywolfsurvival.com with the exact same article, it looks like. So it may have been republished over there, or maybe even illegally copied over there.
You swiped my article. I want it back.
Yeah. So, Grey Wolf, I think he's had some people steal some stuff from before like that. And it's kind of a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, when you post articles on the internet, sometimes people will just copy them and put them elsewhere. And sometimes they link back to you, and sometimes they won't, which is sort of a dick move.
Now, Kalitri's going down for murder one, though.
So, what documents do you need in your bug-out bag? One important item that people don't always think of when planning their bug-out bag list is a file with backup copies of important documents. Having these copies can be extremely useful if you need access to the information on them to prove who you are if you're traveling in a foreign country. It may even come handy if society breaks down and a new one begins. Hey, it could happen. Keep in mind that this doesn't have to be just about what you would put in your bug-out bag.
But what about my frequent flyer miles?
You need to have similar information collected in one place in your house in case of fire. First, let's look at ways you can copy the information, and then we'll go for what you should copy.
Paper copies. The nice thing about paper is it doesn't require power, other than some kind of light to read by, and is ready to go as soon as you grab it. The bad thing is paper doesn't do well if it gets wet, and it's not very efficient at containing a lot of information. It does have its place, though. If nothing else, you have a handy fire tender. If possible, you should keep paper copies in some kind of waterproof package.
Yes, digital copies! In addition, you should keep some kind of digital copies of your documents on a thumb drive. Okay. I can hear some of you grumbling now that you shouldn't do that because the EMP strike will kill your thumb drive and any computer you need to read it. Well, that's definitely a possibility, but in 99% of other situations you'll find yourself in, your thumb drive will still be accessible. Stop focusing your life on the remote chance of the worst thing that likely happen and start putting some effort into dealing with things that are really going to happen.
Focusing on the worst possible thing that happened. What kind of prepper are you?
Yes, I'm a big fan of that. I actually made a thumb drive that's basically bomb-proof. I put it inside a lead pipe.
You put it on
waterproof, yeah.
You put it out on that bombshell, bam.
And it's encrypted. It's really cool. I did a thing on it.
Security software. You can load security software in a drive to password protect it. Some, like the SanDisk Cruiser Fit, has it built in. You can also add encryption software like TrueCrypt,
which is what I use,
which will not only put a password on the drive, in addition to any built-in ones, it gives you a hidden drive. One password opens up your main drive, and a different one opens it all up.
Hiding files. You can hide files on your thumb drive to make them invisible to most people who don't know how to unhide them.
Changing the file names. You can also change the name of file types from whatever it is to something else. For instance, if a file is documents PDF, you can change it to something like abnormal growth of pathogens and manure PDF. To do this, you just right-click the name and choose rename.
Yes. Changing the file type. If your computer is set to show file types, changing the part on the right is right where you are in the step above.
I'm sorry, I'm having to break out of this for just a minute. This article just seems to be about doing a lot of stuff with, like, digital files. It has nothing to do about putting it in your bug-out bag.
Well, you put the zip drive in there. So, yeah, you can change the file type to hide it, so, and, you know, like, change PDF to EXE. Most people won't click on EXE because it's a virus. Zipping.
Adding the file to a zip folder
not only makes it smaller, you can add a password to it as well. If your computer doesn't have that capability, something like 7-Zip is free and works well. With it, you can password protect files and folders. You can get a tiny thumb drive and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, which, I mean, if your entire drive itself is truly encrypted, and I encrypted mine with, like, DoD, higher than DoD level security, so I don't want to encrypt the individual files on it, because that's just an extra hassle for you.
Yeah.
I mean, if they break the DoD security on it, which would take, like, 30 years or something.
The Department of Defense, you have Department of Defense encryption?
Stronger.
You have
Yes.
What?
It's stronger than their standard security. So, yeah.
You hearing that, Ralph?
Yes. Kindle, smartphone, tablet, or laptop. I convert some of my documents into .pdf files and load them onto my iPhone and Kindle. The iPhone makes it easy to get. The battery doesn't last so long. The screen's pretty small. Here we go. What documents do you need?
Finally!
One of the first things you should have a copy of is something that very few people take time to do, but immensely... It is immensely handy, and that is a laminated printout of everything in your bag. If you're like me, you have tiny things packed in all sorts of pouches and pockets in your bug-out bag, and have duplicates and equivalents of things in case something gets lost, broken, or just doesn't work or whatever. Let's see. The easiest way I've found to solve this is to make a simple Excel spreadsheet in addition to what I'm about to lay on you. Having it in a spreadsheet gives you a digital backup and lets you easily update the list and add, change, delete things. You could also just write down with a pen and make it listed a Word document or text file, all that list, yeah, and all that good stuff. Or you could just make it and then print it out.
Which seems like a really good idea. I've never made a list of the things in my bug out bag. I have an Excel sheet of things that I want to get, and sometimes I go check them off as I get them to remove them from the sort of wish list.
Right.
Important references. You should keep a list of things that you may need to reference later that you should have on paper as well as in electronic backup form. Here's a list of some of those things.
Contact phone numbers and addresses of friends, family, and other contacts such as families, doctors, insurance companies, and office.
Emergency contact phone numbers, addresses, and directions how to get there for whenever you're traveling, such as your hotel, the embassy, local police, fire, non-governmental organizations, doctors, blah, blah, blah.
Maps of the area.
Yes. Concealed carry laws for each state which you may travel.
Translation book for each language you may need.
Yes. Especially from the south to the north, we can't understand each other. It's a Coke, y'all. It's a Coke. Everything.
It is a pop.
Printed out paper with your name, hotel address, phone number, and common words such as yes, no, please, thank you, I need a taxi, I need a doctor.
In both English and whatever languages you'll need right next to each other.
That's yours. You read that one.
Yeah, I know, but you stopped.
Repair manual for your vehicle.
If you have a ham radio and a ham radio license, get the list of repeaters and offsets for the areas you plan on going, as well as typical frequencies that people hang out on.
Interesting. Manuals for any devices you have that are complicated, especially if you're using something like a ham radio. I actually keep every manual for everything I buy in a Ziploc bag in a drawer.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, all the warranty information, all that stuff's there.
Never know when you might need it. Official documents. Here's a list of other items you should have in both in paper and electronic backup forms for everyone in your group that has one. You can get copies of some of these on the USA.gov. Some will need to be encrypted or hidden somehow.
Passports and visas.
Driver's license.
Birth, death, and marriage certificates.
Any identification you have in your wallet, at least 2 photo IDs for each person.
Eyeglass prescription.
Bank information, including account, password, or PIN. The phone number for every account.
I appreciate them writing PIN and not PIN number.
Yeah.
Recent bank statement for each account.
Personal identification number. Credit card numbers, bank phone numbers, expiration dates and security code, password, PIN, or whatever you need to cancel them if they're lost, compromised, or stolen.
Health insurance cards and or Medicare, Medicaid.
Travel and car insurance.
Military documents such as DD-214.
Last year's tax return.
Really?
Yeah.
College, high school, and trade school diplomas. And GEDs, if you have those like me.
Important photos.
Recent photo and information such as allergies for each member of your group.
The title to your home and or cars.
account and contact info for each bill you have, such as cable, phone, electric, etc.
Medical history, immunization records, and a list of medications.
Plane tickets, flight, and or travel itinerary.
Prescriptions for medications.
Proof of medications.
No, proof of employment.
Medications.
That's prescriptions for medications. You're reading the front of one sentence and the end of another one.
Prescriptions for medications.
What I just said. Proof of employment, such as a pay stub.
Living will.
License to carry permit or relevant CCW.
Yes. You also need to keep any copies of survival and reference documents in your thumb drive and something like Kindle. This allows you to, good stuff.
If you want to read the article in its entirety, where do they need to go again?
GreyWolfSurvival.com. Our link will be in the show notes, as always.
I think that was a good article. I think it took a minute getting to the point. I mean, it did all this explanatory stuff about how to, you know, files and all that stuff. Yeah. I'm like, it's like somebody said, it's like Universal Studios said about the movie Mallrats when they were making it. The opening of Mallrats was much, much longer. And they didn't actually get into the mall until, like, over 30 minutes into the movie. They said, look, if you're going to name a movie Mallrats, you better get them into the mall and get them into the mall quick.
Yeah.
And if that's going to be documents you should carry in your bug-out bag, get to the point.
Well, it was telling you how you could arrange your electronic documents.
Yeah, but it could put all that stuff on the end.
Yeah. All right, so good stuff there.
I was starting to lose interest.
Oh, you're terrible.
Yeah, I am.
Entertain
me, damn it.
So that's not
and entertain me quick. That is my motto.
Here we go. Next article.
Why we use raised bed gardens. Now, what exactly is a raised bed garden? I've heard the term a thousand times, and I think it's basically where the earth is sitting above the earth.
Yes. Like, normally you build a container. So, like, you build walls around your area.
And then
you put in compost or, you know, topsoil, potting soil, and then you plant above ground instead of doing things like tilling.
Okay.
Which, you know, sort of bad for the earth. It compresses the ground underneath it. It kills all the soil life in your soil, that's what makes the fertility the first year. You murder millions upon millions of soil life, which, you know, you're growing on their fertility. The next year, you have none because they're all dead. Instead of them being alive and adding fertility to your soil.
Yeah, but farmers will use the same, like, strip of land, like, year after year after year after year after year.
Yes, and they pour chemicals on it to add that fertility to it.
Fertilizer and whatnot.
Fertilizer is made from oil.
I thought fertilizer was made from poop.
No, they get it from oil, and they derive out the nitrogen, the NPK, from, like, crude oil.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What happened to the old, like, poop and, like, earthworm droppings and shrimp guts and stuff?
Now they send that off to get rid of it and bring in oil.
Yeah, but it used to be organic and, like, more natural.
Not anymore.
Completely biodegradable.
And they genetically engineer the crops.
Why would you use oil to fertilize your... okay, Fight Club's coming true. Did you know you can use old motor oil to fertilize your lawn?
It's only a step away from using Brondo in the fields. It's what plants crave.
It is what plants crave.
This article comes from thehomesteadinghippie.com. Why use raised bed gardens? Why use raised bed gardens? We love gardening, and we are fortunate enough to be able to raise about 75% of our own produce each year. That accounts for all the produce we freeze, can, and dehydrate, as well as eat fresh. We use a combination of containers, raised beds, and conventional ground gardens to accomplish this. Today I'm going to share with you why we use raised bed gardens.
It's easier to keep down the weeds. We place cardboard and paper from our chicken feed bags under the bed boxes to keep grass and weeds to a minimum. It's much easier to weed when there isn't any, right? Plus, the bags are made of paper, so they get composted down. The only drawback is that we have to do that each year, since the bags don't last after each season. Cardboard also composts down, and we can go almost 2 years before we have to replace them. We figure out when it's time, when the weeding becomes more work, and makes a note in our garden book for that bed.
It's easier on the back and knees. Not having to garden on your knees is a total plus. I'm not able to kneel down for any period of time, let alone an extended period of time. So, having the beds up higher makes it so much easier on my knees and back. I don't have to bend and stoop to plant and harvest nearly as much or as long. You went too far.
It offers an ability to have a wide selection of veggies. We have 15 raised garden beds currently, and each one of them has a designated veggie that is planted in it, so we are able to plant a wider variety of veggies. For example, there is a pea area, green bean area, poor James, okra bed, kale bed, and so forth. We can still plant our 50 tomato plants, but there isn't any overrun into the carrots when we use the beds.
I actually don't like that for, like, diversity. It's all monocropping. Each single bed is one thing where you get benefits from having multiple things in a bed sort of contributing to each other.
Yeah, didn't we do that?
Companion planting.
Yeah, companion planting. We talked about that on the show. Like
basil and tomatoes go well together.
Months ago.
Yeah. Good memory, my friend.
You skipped a bunch of stuff.
Blah, 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 blah. Actually, next. Yes, it makes companion planting easier.
Oh, we got ahead of ourselves.
Companion planting is the art of putting veggies that like each other close together, and those that don't far away. Having raised beds makes that easier to do in the little space we have. So our basil can go intermingled with the bell peppers, and our potato bin is far enough away from our Swiss chard.
Why's it got to be Swiss chard? Our raised beds are made from 2x4x12 or 2x4x8 boards, and some are cut into 4x4 boxes, some are 8x2 boxes, and we have two 12x2 boxes that the peas usually go into. They were made in less than 15 minutes each and have served for over 6 years so far with no issues. They are not treated wood, as we didn't want the chemicals to possibly leach into the soil or vegetables. The raised beds make our life a lot easier in many ways. The only drawback I have with them is that moving around them is a pain. We are planning on fixing that issue this year by putting landscape cloth, sand, and gravel between them. This should not only pretty the area up, but make mowing between the beds ancient history.
I like that. Mowing is dumb.
Yeah.
Do you use raised beds? What's your experience been like? Need some help on our gardening wells? Looks like they have a gardening book for $9.95.
The ultimate gardening tool.
Sounds like a good deal. I would suggest getting it.
All right.
TheHomesteadingHippie.com. Check them out. Good stuff.
See, we started bashing on them for the companion planting, and then all of a sudden they're like, companion planting.
Well! They did say they like to segregate all their plants, and then the next sentence they said how they like to use companion planting. So I was a little confused, but it's true.
It is a good way to separate harmful plants. I mean, because some plants will, like, devour each other.
Yeah.
You have to keep the potatoes away from the Swiss chard for some reason.
I'd have my potatoes separate. But for a lot of stuff, I like to sort of, like, survival of the fittest attitude. I put all my seeds down, and if a seed doesn't want to grow there, then it won't grow there, or the other seed will kill it, and then I know that, you know, so-and-so doesn't grow there.
Hmm.
And the ones that do grow there will be fitter and stronger. Excellent. So, good stuff. Check them out. God damn it. All right, and for the main topic this week, I kind of want to briefly talk about my experiences of living in a tiny house over winter. So, my house is 204 square feet.
It's a shed.
It's a tiny house.
Well, now it is.
Yes.
Because sheds don't have composting toilets.
Or lofts or any of the other stuff I had. So, 204 feet. I had two heaters that I used all winter long. One little kerosene heater, directional, points out, you know, like a lot of the ones you see in the stores now are omnidirectional.
Right.
This one is, you know, straight out.
It basically radiates.
Yes.
Yeah. This one, you can aim the damn thing where you want the heat at.
Yes. And I had one that was a tiny, mostly broken electric one.
Okay. Well, that's the one good thing about having not that much space. It's easier to heat.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple times where it hit, like, you know, -4,
mm-hmm.
where...
You were cozy?
I was not freezing. I had them both going for a while.
Freezing's important.
Yeah, it was, you know, I was comfortable, but I was, you know, I was certainly not sitting around in shorts.
Were you shivering, though?
No.
Oh, see, that...
No, I would wake up pretty cold, and, you know, like, you'd sometimes I would see, like, you know... frost coming out of my breath.
I despise waking up cold. When you wake up, it feels like even your bones are frozen.
Well, it's only when I get out from underneath the covers. I prefer to sleep in the cold.
Oh my god.
Not like I did in your house last night where I was so cold I couldn't sleep.
One time during the winter when the power was out, that caused me to be really late for work.
Yeah.
Because every time I got out from the cover, I'm like, ooh, and just jump right back under it.
Yeah.
I think I called out of work that day.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, I would have had to call out anyway because it was like 2.5 feet of snow outside.
Oh, right.
And I couldn't get there.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that. Yeah. There was, yeah. So heating is not that bad. I mean, when I was using just the kerosene heater for, you know, several days, during the ice storm, actually, I was using pretty much only, kerosene with occasionally I would use the electric heat sort of as a, take the edge off of it, because the kerosene is sort of a slow, like, it builds up to the heat.
Right.
But when you first turn it on, it's going to take a while to actually get up to speed, get up to heat. So I'd use the electric one as, you know, quick, like, throw some heat out, and then, you know, run, like, for 30 minutes to an hour, and then turn it off, and by then the kerosene heat. So getting a, filling up my old military jerry can of kerosene...
Jerry can.
...would last me... about 6 days.
Wow. That ain't bad.
Yeah. And that, you know, obviously I don't run it while I'm asleep, cause I like the temperature to drop down and get a little cold while I'm sleeping. You know, so the entire time I was up, I was running it. And for the 6 days I used it constantly, I didn't leave the house cause I was snowed in. I was iced in. I couldn't leave. So that's 8 days of constant use. 6 days of constant use. And at the end, I was like, okay, I'm out of, actually, I have kerosene now. But that's $8 for 6 days.
Not bad.
Not bad. Compared to, like, you know, electric heat, you said yours jumped up, well, obviously 204 square feet is, you know, about the size of your bedroom.
Right.
Roughly. No, not quite, but yeah, close. Your house is bigger than that, and your electric bill was like $300. My electric bill, much smaller. Kerosene bill, even factored into that, would be, what, $30?
Something like that.
Yeah. So, heating a tiny house is pretty efficient. You know, I insulate it very well. Problem I didn't think about while building, and then I'll have to come up with a solution for next year, is condensation.
Ah.
Yes, I don't have anything to remove condensation from the air. So
you need a dehumidifier.
I do. I have to get a dehumidifier for next year. It kind of builds up. Sometimes there'd be moisture on the ground. I think I blew up my microwave from condensation. It kicked the breaker one time.
Good God.
Yeah. So, you know, I had to, eventually I ended up like, I had a gable vent in this roof above the loft that had that blocked off for a while, and I ended up unblocking it and let a little moisture out. Which it didn't let in really that much cold air, but it let some of the moisture out. You could see it looked like some moisture got into my laptop because there's.
Yeah, I have noticed that slight discoloration on the edge.
Yeah, I think that was moisture. So, moisture is a serious issue in a tiny house. You need to have some way to vent the moisture out. And that's not even, I don't even have really running water in the house, which we'll talk about in a moment. So that wasn't bringing moisture. It's like I was taking long showers and steaming up the bathrooms, which that you definitely would need a fan in the bathroom, venting the air out, and some sort of, from doing research, you pretty much just have to either crack your windows and use more heat to let the moisture out, or you need a dehumidifier.
Right.
In which case you're going to be using like, so, I mean, really, either use more power to heat or you use more power to dehumidify. You've got to do something. You've got to mitigate the moisture issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or you start frying your electronics and just rotting your house.
Yeah, that can be horrible.
Yeah. Some sort of vent to get the moisture out. So that was a big problem that I had to deal with. Bathing in the cold can kind of be an issue, you know, without hot water heater. I have a hot water heater, but I don't have running water, so the hot water heater doesn't do anything. It's not hooked up.
But just keep in mind, people used to bathe in rivers.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Waterfalls.
Yeah. I was sort of like sponge bathing. And that worked fairly well. You know, I'd put the heater in the bathroom and I would heat the bathroom, which is, you know, size of a closet. So it's not that hard to heat it up really. You know, and then I'd boil water and, you know, fill up in a bin and, you know, sort of sponge myself, which oddly enough, that's how Arnold Schwarzenegger grew up. That's all they had was like a bucket and they'd have to carry their water from the town and then they would like sponge bathe on it. So I did that. Doing dishes is a major pain in the ass. So I did all sorts of like, I was using salt to dry clean my dishes for a while because salt kills bacteria and viruses and germs.
Right.
And then, you know, I'd like use salt to grind it off and then, you know, use as little water as possible. A couple times I did boil water and fill up the sink and then clean them that way. That's a huge pain in the ass. I was using Lysol wipes for a while to clean dishes with.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it, you know, sanitizes them and then you set them aside and it, you know, that was getting them pretty clean. Now I'm going to set up a washing station outside, I think is what the plan is. So there's that. I was sleeping in the hammock for a while before I got the loft in. And then the thing about hammocks is when it gets cold to a certain point, you lose a lot of heat.
Out your backside.
So going into the season, I bought a heating mat to lay down underneath me. And yeah. I also have an underquilt that goes around the outside. So it's a blanket that I have tied to a ridgeline string above it, and I pull it down. So that covers my backside. And then with the heating pad, which I'm sorry to say, didn't last so much the season. It started out being so hot that I couldn't even like stand it on the one temperature. And at the end, I had it cranked all the way up. And it you know, it's one of those things where like it just got less and less effective.
How did Jordan's do?
That's what it was.
Oh.
I used Jordan's one. Cause he ended up not, I mean, he just basically sat on my lap all winter.
He's like, you're warmer, Dad.
Yeah. It was a Sunbeam one I got from Walmart. It was like $20. I guess it made the season, but that's about it. It does. I mean, you know, sleeping on the hammock, it would warm up the backside, which would,
you know,
allow me not to use heat.
That should be Sunbeam's slogan, good for a season.
Good for a season, yeah.
Yeah, because all the Sunbeam stuff that I've bought electronics
lasts a season.
Pretty much. Doesn't last longer than a year.
Yeah, I have an electric blanket by them, and I'm not sure it really even gets warm anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, the blanket itself is decent as a blanket, but I don't think the heating element is doing anything. And that was more than $20, which is kind of annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I bought another heating blanket one time from an off-brand place, and it lasted like 3 days. So, at least, you know, that wasn't even a season.
Okay.
Heating blanket, it worked. When I got the mattress up in the loft, obviously that's enough insulation and heat rises, so the loft would stay warm fairly longer. And then I had a good blanket up there, so I didn't need to insulate the backside so much because I was sleeping on a mattress. That was good. And what else during the winter? Don't do anything with moisture. Think I'll stay cool. I guess at the end of this year, I'm going to have some suggestions for summer because I don't have an air conditioner and it can really get hot in there sometimes. I've been using a cocoon of fans while I sleep. So I have like one fan point at my head and one fan point at my feet. And it usually stays fairly decent. And then when I wake up, I'll move the fan down to the downstairs and blow on me.
I can't sleep with a fan pointing at my head for the simple reason I'll wake up with a headache every damn time.
It doesn't affect me.
Me and my daughter both, if we have air blowing right at our head all night, we will wake up with a headache that would make us want to kill a moose.
That's weird.
With our bare hands.
For me, if it points at my head, it feels like it cools my whole body down more effectively. I don't know. That's just... the noise helps me sleep too. So I think that's about all I have for winter lessons I learned. I mean, the big one is definitely the moisture. Just keeping the moisture out,
mm-hmm.
is a constant battle. All right. What do we got coming up next, CEO Mike?
Coming up next is our nutrition pump corner. And improve upon these six areas to reach your health goals.
Yes, this comes from our good friends at robwolf.com.
.com!
Improve upon these six areas to reach your health goals. Written by Kevin Can. If you want to read the whole article, you can go to robwolf.com. The show notes will be in the link. I'm going to jump right into, the list, and he has some bonus things. So, other things that ruffle my feathers. Juicing. And this also ruffles my feathers. Juicing. This is an uncomfortable way to attempt to cleanse your body. Just eat fruits and veggies and minimize the crap in your diet. Here's a lot from people that are like, you know, cause obviously, you know, a lot of my friends happen to know me as, you know, a healthy guy. You know, they have health questions. Usually they'll ask me if they're smart.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I had a friend one time, like, try to get me to suggest, like, you know, cleanses to detox the body. And I'm just like, don't eat shit. But I want to detox. Stop eating shit. No, I need to detox though.
Well, quit putting toxins in your body by stop eating shit.
And basically, they just wanted me to say you should just start juicing stuff, which I don't think you should. I think you should limit the amount of calories you drink, because it's easy to sneak in tons of calories. I mean,
you're basically concentrating all the sugars that are in
everything. I mean,
when you're juicing.
That's, I mean, I preach a low processed food diet. Juicing is ultra processed.
Yes, it's the epitome of processing.
Yes.
I mean, what do? You put it in a food processor?
You put it in a juicer processes it. I mean, it takes, like, you know, everything and turns it into complete liquid.
Yeah.
So, I'm not a fan of it. No. Just eat the fruits and veggies in their native forms.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing, only eat raw fruits and vegetables. Cut them in a way you like to eat them. If you're pressed for time, it's okay to use the microwave. You're not going to grow a third eye.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, hoobob about the microwave being the death machine.
Or just cooking them and being, oh, you're cooking all the nutrients out of them.
Yeah, whatever. If you're going to, I mean, I can see sometimes eating them raw is better. Sometimes you don't get the nutrients unlocked if you eat them raw. But I mean.
Remember that eating them raw thing next time you fucking cut into a plantain.
Oh God, I have eaten a raw plantain.
How did that work out for you?
It almost made me throw up.
No, but meanwhile, when I cut up the plantain and used it as croutons in a salad one time frying them.
Exactly. That was a, and I bet we got more nutrients out of them. I
deep fried them too.
Yeah.
They were like one of the highlights of that evening.
Yes. Deep fried plantain. Amazing. If it's paleo, it must be healthy. And in the article, he says Amy crushed this one, which is a link. We talked about that in the paleofication thing.
Slapping paleo on everything, like the way they used to slap Atkins on everything.
Yes. Paleo does not make everything better. If it's cookie, it's still a fucking cookie. Stop eating cookies.
Unless you get them from wellfoodco.com. Then get as many as you like.
Even then, it should be a treat. Next! Mikael.
Red wine. An occasional glass of wine is okay. However, a glass of wine every night is not okay. Somehow, we have justified drinking every night. Alcohol negatively affects sleep, hormones, and glucose and fat metabolism. So, then how do we go about making a plan to help us achieve sustainable weight loss? The first thing we need to do is identify the area of our life that can lead to increased caloric intake and impaired energy homeostasis.
Good. I think just from eliminating booze from my diet, I've been able to maintain a better weight and better health overall. I mean, just doing that one thing, I broke plateaus and lost weight and have maintained them. I mean,
cool.
I mean, you see me. I mean, I've been a year and a half sober, and I think I'm a lot better than I was, you know, the past several years that I did drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard Rob Wolf explain this one time on a podcast, and I think he nailed it. Someone wrote in, and they're trying to find out how they can, like, continue drinking but maintain a paleo lifestyle. And he's like, you might have a fucking problem. He's like, maybe you need to look into that. Like, if you're trying everything you can to figure out how you can still drink, to you know, figure out ways around it and whatnot, you probably have an addiction, and you probably need to seek help. And I was listening to that at the time, being an alcoholic, and thinking, oh, you're dumb.
Rob. I'll figure this out. Yeah, you probably do have a problem, and you probably need to look into that.
So here's a quick list of the most common areas to improve to reach your health and fitness goals.
You hurt my arm just then.
You keep staring at your watch.
My wife is supposed to be on her way somewhere. Right? She has a time frame.
Yes, you said she'd be back here 11 minutes, which means we have 30 minutes, which means we have good time.
Which means she hasn't left yet.
Whatever.
Here is a quick... Oh, I read that. Sleep. One night of sleep deprivation can increase caloric intake by 300 calories. Oh, yeah, it can. Get 79 hours. Sometimes I go for 9 to 15 hours. In a completely blacked out room.
Oh, that's too much.
No, it's wonderful.
No, it's not. It's too much.
No.
No, see, that's the thing. Modern man has this problem. They want to cram all their sleep into one spot. You're not supposed to sleep like that. You're supposed to sleep in smaller quantities. I mean, it was not uncommon for ancient man to wake up in the middle of the night for a good 2 or 3 hours and just, like, think or have sex or whatever. I mean, and just lay there in restful reflection.
Right, but then they also take naps throughout the day. Like, overall, they would get a good amount of sleep.
Yeah, not all together. So that whole 7 to 9 hours, that's bullcrap. And people who get more than 8 hours of sleep are like 60% more likely to drop dead in the next 10 years.
I want you to prove that with facts.
It was on Cracked.
I don't believe Cracked.
They're
full of BS. Read the next one.
You're so full of BS. I don't even know where we... Stress. Many of us are emotional eaters. When we become stressed, we tend to reach for our favorite comfort food. Stress also impairs insulin sensitivity. Too much artificial light is also a stressor. Shut it down 1 to 1.5 hours before bed and relax.
Exercise, my friend. Exercise increases glucose uptake in the muscles. This leaves less sugar to be stored in unwanted places. Too little exercise, and we will store fat in the midsection, and too much will drive hunger. Do some strength training 2 to 4 days per week, and attempt to be more physically active throughout the daily life. Walk more places, stand up at work, etc.
Vitamin D may actually play a role in our appetite, acting as a hormone in our hypothalamus.
Yes, basically they're saying everyone needs more D. Nutrition. Eat plentiful servings of non-starchy vegetables per day. This helps us in a few ways. For one, nutritional deficiencies drive hunger. Non-starchy vegetables are filled with nutrients to make sure that we are not deficient in certain ones. Although they expand the stomach, and this increases our satiety, in other words, they make us feel full and require more glucose to digest than they give us. This is a way to decrease caloric intake without making it deliberate, allowing your fat stores to be freed up as usable energy. Also, eat enough protein for meat, fish, and eggs. Protein balances blood sugar and increases satiety.
Social relationships. It is important to have positive social relationships with family and friends. This has been shown in research to be as important in our overall health as not smoking and exercise.
Yes. Congrats on you. You recently gave up the smoking.
Yeah, I did. I'm about a month without a cigarette now.
Congrats.
Health. Now, trust me, I'm a guy that I was smoking like damn near a pack a day.
Yeah, you and your wife were just inhaling them.
See, that's the thing. If it wasn't for my lungs sucking ass.
Yeah, you were also an asthmatic.
I'm still an asthmatic. I still have to use an inhaler like daily.
We could cure that.
We'll make that a thing on your other thing.
Yeah. Let's see. From that. Okay, so the article goes on. I thought this guy nailed it. I agreed with pretty much everything he wrote in here.
I agreed with almost everything he wrote in
there. Right. I mean, if you want to do an experiment, I mean, I tend to feel better if I get a good solid 8 to 9 hour sleep whack. And I know people are successful with like polyphasic sleep. You know, where I think you remember an episode of Seinfeld where Kramer was experimenting with polyphasic sleep where he would sleep like 15 minutes out of every hour or something.
Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, polyphasic sleep. I don't think I could do without, and you'd have to have, you basically have to be self-employed or a bum to even attempt polyphasic sleep.
And plus, falling asleep 15 minutes
I can't do it.
No, it's not exactly easy to do.
Yeah, you have to get on the regimen to where your body's used to sleeping like that at the drop of a dime, and I can't do it. I have a hard time napping. Like, if I nap, something rare and extraordinary has happened.
I mean, yeah, still, 15 minutes out of every hour, what's the workout?
It's one way.
It's 8 hours.
Yeah, some people do other things where, like, they sleep an hour every, like, 3 hours. There's different ways to do polyphasic sleep. To me, optimal is to go to sleep when you're tired and wake up without an alarm clock when you're rested.
That's natural.
That's natural. It's hard to do with the working world, though.
No, and incidentally, I read that stuff about, you know, because so many people will wake up, they'll go to sleep, and then, like, a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will agree with this, at some point, you'll wake up in the middle of the night. Your eyes will pop open. It doesn't matter how tired you are. You're going to wake up. I mean, it might only be for like 5 minutes. You might doze back off. It might only be for like 30 seconds, but you're waking up in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, I've got this problem. I just can't stay asleep. No, that's not a problem. That's the natural way it's supposed to go.
I don't know.
Well, you see, back before the modern clock and alarms and the 40-hour work week, people would go to fucking bed when the sun went down, and they would get up when the sun came up, which during those winter months were, you know, sometimes over 12 hours of darkness.
Which I have done on very many occasions where I'll sleep for 12 hours, and it's weird. Sometimes you'll wake up and you'll feel like a million bucks. Like, you know, in Ghostbusters 2, you know, coming out of the slide thing, you're like, oh, I feel like a million bucks.
I gotta tell you, I love you. Yeah, I love you too.
Yeah. At other times you wake up and feel like you got hit by a truck.
Yeah.
I heard about this app on your phone that tracks your sleeping patterns, and you'll set it so you want to wake up at 5:30.
Uh-huh.
It'll track your sleep patterns to wake you not in REM sleep. So it'll push off the alarm either a little bit earlier or a little bit later to wake you out of that sleep so you're rested. Like, cause being jolted out of a dream is really jarring and bad for the sleep. But if you're like, you know, if you're into one of the in-between phases where you're not dreaming, waking up, you have a higher chance of being fully rested.
There's one thing I miss about smoking.
What?
The nicotine intake is good for memory enhancement.
Oh, yeah.
Nicotine has a lot of good memory enhancing qualities, and it'll help you remember your dreams more vividly. And since I quit smoking, I hardly remember any of my dreams, and if I do remember a dream, it vanishes. Parts of it starts falling away. I know for a fact last night that I had an insanely long, I mean, if it was a movie, it would have been like fucking Titanic long.
Lord of the Rings.
Just segmented sequence of events, one after the other, in great detail, and then 5 minutes after I'm awake, I can't hardly remember any of it. I just knew it was there, and now I've got this hole, and it drives me nuts.
Oddly, I'm actually not that against nicotine itself.
No, nicotine itself is fine. It's just the tar and all the other stuff that's harmful to your lungs.
The 99 chemicals, the urea, the stuff in cigarettes. So, like, if you said, James, I was going to start supplementing with nicotine pills or patches for like memory augmentation and some of the other key benefits from nicotine, I'd be like, that's a good, I could see that, you know.
See, memory's important to me. I've always had a really good memory. I can memorize stuff relatively easy. I don't have
you proved it a couple times in this episode already.
Yeah, I don't have an eidetic memory by any stretch of the imagination, but I do have a relatively good memory, better than a lot of people I know.
I actually think I have a weak form of eidetic memory where I can actually remember images, pictures, and things I've seen, like, if I remember a book I've read, I remember the page.
That used to be called photographic memory too.
I actually miss the old term. Well, I prefer photographic.
One of my auxiliary moms.
Yeah. So I prefer photographic memory, and I don't remember everything I see, but when I do remember things, it's in picture form.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of why it's weird that I listen to audiobooks and podcasts, because if I remember the podcasts, I remember them visually as well. I convert the sounds and the images to pictures in my brain and remember those.
Well, of course you do. I mean, we're like two of the only people that actually see this podcast.
Yeah, no, I mean listening. If I listen to a podcast, I remember it as seeing the person talk. And then seeing the words.
I don't remember it that way. I remember it as like
where
I was at that moment.
I don't
like in a, like if I'm driving somewhere and I'm listening to something. If I drive back through there, it'll stir up memories of what I was listening to at the time.
Yeah, like
or if I listen to it again, it'll just make me think of where I was at the time. I connect stuff like that.
You may have actually heard me like describe things before. Like sometimes I'm like I can't remember if I saw a movie or read a book. I'm like, I don't remember what media it was. Like, it was either a book I read or a movie or TV show I saw. Because when I read books, I see them as movies in my head.
Yeah, well, so do I.
And, you know, people, so when I remember back, I don't remember, like, reading. I remember the images in my head that I formed for that book.
Right.
Which is, yeah. Tangent, you learned some insight into our brain workings.
And now we have our announcement.
Now we have our announcement. We have an answer. So, some of you may listen to Survival Punk and really, really enjoy Nutrition Punk. Some of you may actually listen to Survival Punk podcasts because you are paleo fanatics, you like healthy nutrition, you like fitness, you like when we talk about CrossFit, weightlifting. You may actually really enjoy that, but you may get pissed off about some of the survival stuff. Like, I had someone before really love the paleo, you know, recipes I put on the website, but they're like, I'm just not into guns, which, you know, they weren't overtly, like, attacking me. They're just like, you know, like, oh, I had an ex-husband that was, like, you know, sort of crazy, you know, a little bit skittish. So she didn't care about him, you know, which is fine. I love guns. I'm pro Second Amendment. But, you know, if you're just, I mean, she wasn't anti-gun. She just wasn't pro-gun. Whatever, you know, you can like what you don't like and don't like what you don't like. And I know some of you who listen to the Survival Punk podcast, because it is the Survival Punk podcast, you know, sometimes Nutrition Punk kind of, you're just like, you know, I just want to eat my grains and go on with my life. Shut up, James. I don't give a shit. So Nutrition Punk may not be your thing. I've had people that say they enjoy, you know, the sort of diverse mix of the podcast, and it's definitely not going to stop. There is always going to be a Nutrition Punk corner on the Survival Punk podcast.
But now,
I'm sort of branching out.
You're diversifying.
I'm diversifying. I realized I was sort of diluting the message that, you know, you go to Survival Punk, and then, you know, maybe some weeks I'm just in a nutrition mood, fitness mood, and that's all I post about, and you're like, oh, I don't care about this. Or, you know, I post nothing about survival stuff that week, or I post nothing but survival stuff that week, and if you come there for the paleo stuff, you're like, oh, I don't care this week. So I'm going to sort of kind of split it. I'm going to try to focus more on Survival Punk, and now on NutritionPunk.com.
I'm going to focus
on nutrition and fitness and, you know, documenting my continuing, ever-progressing journey towards being a complete healthy person.
Yes. And occasionally you might encounter a random Nutrition Punk podcast.
Possibly. Me and Mike do like to gab, so we may do that. I plan on doing a lot of articles there, but, you know, whatever. We may do a straight Nutrition Punk podcast. It may be a random thing. Who knows? If you guys demand a Nutrition Punk podcast, you want nothing but nutrition, then...
drop us a line, james@survivalpunk.com.
Or
james@nutritionpunk.com.
Yes, which I think I'm going to set up just a forward over to Survival Punk. So I don't have to check two emails. I don't know. You know, I'm like...
Oh, you're at the
I'm like, oh, God, Hillary Clinton. I can't check two email addresses. This is too hard. I can't do that. It's too much. Two email addresses? Who can check that many?
Oh, my God. Email.
Yeah. Nutrition Punk may not have as many political overtones. Maybe it will. I don't know. Who gives a shit?
Well, if nutrition gets political, it will.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there some senator starts sticking his nose in where it doesn't fucking belong into what you're putting in your belly. Yes. Yeah, it might get fucking political.
If the FDA continues to try to say that people that eat paleo have a mental disability, mental illness, then yeah, I might bring up how they're dumb fucks.
Everything is a mental disorder these days, okay? ADHD used to be daydreamers.
Right. Now, yeah, and...
ODD used to just be stubbornness.
You know what? If we do a Nutrition Punk podcast, I've got some things I've been wanting to talk about on the podcast that are way down in the nutrition world that is highly inflammatory, where I think I could... You remember that post I did that I pissed off all the Nazi fucking pitchfork-waving idiot...
Is this the breast milk?
The breast milk thing. I have something along those lines that I think... also inflame people and piss them off.
All you did was post a picture of the ingredients off a Similac can, and you woke up the next morning and all hell had broken loose.
Yeah. So it's pretty, like, if you look at the literature and you look at the science claims, they're making a lot of predictions that the children born now will be the first generation to not outlive their parents because of all the, children diabetes is so far off the scale, those kids are not going to make
That's because the vast majority of people these days don't actually eat food anymore.
Exactly.
They eat what the stores and commercials are trying to tell you is food.
Yes, and that's all they eat, and, if you're not frightened by that, that if you're a parent and your children are eating this way, you may outlive them. If that doesn't scare the fuck out of you, something's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, something's wrong. I mean, I can't even, I mean, I'm not a parent, so I can't even imagine that. Just the thought of you outliving all of your kids.
Yeah, I don't even want to think
about that. Yeah, exactly.
That's not something that a parent likes to think about. No parent wants to be at the child's
funeral. Right, it's really been on my mind recently, and I'm like, I just don't know. Maybe it'll be like one of the first Nutrition Punk articles.
I heard a grieving mother one time say, it's so unfair. You should not see both ends of a person's life.
No. So yeah, nutritionpunk.com, that's the thing now.
I got a little depressed there for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, we took it to a dark place. So maybe we'll talk about that, at some point. Either here or Nutrition Punk. So whore us out, sell some advertising space. Cat Potato Mike.
Oh,
Mike!
Well, if you want to sell your product on, this wonderful podcast.
And please do.
And we hope you do. Just drop a line to james@survivalpunk.com. And, we will work you out a deal. He takes meat and precious metals and barter and bitcoins and cash. He loves cash. We all love cash.
Yes.
He takes all of that stuff. So, james@survivalpunk.com. And if you want to become part of something much, much greater than yourself, if you've been looking for that place to belong, you've been looking for an army to join. There's only one army that joins. And you know why? It's the Survival Punk Army. Why should you join it? Because it wants you!
Yes. Exclusive discounts to online vendors, ebooks from people in our community.
10 to 20% off.
10 to 20% off. Zip files of these wonderful podcasts for you to download in convenient chunks.
Exclusive content.
Yes. We're still working on a big one we have on human extinctions that have happened in the past. And population bombs and some other stuff. So, interesting stuff coming up. Only for you guys.
Absolutely. And now it is time for the Couch Potato Celebrity Invite of the Week.
Yes, which is awesome. You went and did some work for us.
Yes, I did. I don't know how well this we're going to work out, but I'm hoping. Now, I recently became acquainted with one of the co-hosts of a different podcast.
Oddly enough, local.
Yeah, a local podcast. It's all about CrossFit. It's called Talon Talks. TALON.
Yes.
Talks. And you can find them Talon Talks. talenttalks.podbean.com.
Which is weird, because when you said Talent Talks, I was like, that must be CrossFit Talent in Franklin. I'm pretty sure they sent someone to regionals last year, mm-hmm. and I was excited for them.
Yeah, it is CrossFit Talent in Franklin.
Yes.
Yeah, they have a CrossFit gym there. They sent somebody to regionals, like you said. And no, I talked with Tara. She's the wife and co-owner.
Yeah,
one of the owners. And I am inviting the Cheatums onto the podcast.
Awesome. I have not been strict CrossFitting for a while. I do some like at home workouts. But man, I can't wait to get back into a CrossFit box and just I want a front squat something so hard, dude.
That sounded dirty.
It does. I want to front squat and deadlift, and I want to have some weight, and I miss it.
I've got weight.
Yeah, I pick you up.
Yeah.
So yeah, CrossFit Talon, you are invited. I want to chat with you.
Yeah, open door, open ended invite, onto the show any day, any time.
Yes.
Well, this.
And if you want to make Mike do burpees, we can arrange that.
Yeah, that'll be some video for
the
YouTube.
We'll stop by the box and podcast there and make you do burpees and toes to bars.
Yeah, I made a, I, Yeah, I was planning on trying to swing by to introduce myself, but I haven't
made business cards.
Yeah, I made a business card. Yeah, I haven't actually shown you my business card yet. See, there's my business card.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Should drop the logo on there somewhere.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, but I was trying to make it on the fly.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, CrossFit Talon. This has been another great podcast with all this trials and tribulations.
This has been a screwed up podcast, and you know it.
You know what? We had adversity, but I think we pulled through, and in the end, I think we delivered an awesome Synosogen podcast.
Yep, and on that bombshell, it's time to end. So for the Couch Potato, for the Survival Punk podcast, I'm Couch Potato Mike.
I am James the Survival Punk Burnett.
And for everybody, make sure that your microphone's plugged in and that it's actually selected, as ours apparently is not. DIY to survive.
DIY to survive, you guys!
You guys!